Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Our topic today is the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Discovery Institute, secular fundamentalism, and the National Museum of Natural Science. How's that for a mouthful? We're going to be looking at something that emerged in controversy. The Washington Post played a critical role in this in an editorial that was published in recent days in which it condemned a film for being religious, even though the film doesn't even mention God. We'll be talking about that in just a few moments. A special guest, Jay Richards of the Discovery Institute, is going to be with us, and it will be a fascinating discussion. First, a review of the news from Great Britain. An ominous report coming out that the woman who is there considered the leading expert in biomedical ethics, that is Baroness Warnock, Mary Warnock, has released a report suggesting that babies who are born at under 24 months of gestation should not be treated as if they might survive. They should be allowed to die. Doctors and nurses in Great Britain are being consulted on whether to allow the most premature babies to die with a treatment offered in only exceptional cases. Now, this is very similar to the kind of logic you see in the Netherlands, and what we've been covering is the Groningen Protocol. And what you have in Great Britain is a raging debate in which all these issues are interlinked. Abortion, infanticide, and now the medical treatment of premature infants. Now, the logic that is used by Baroness Warnock is particularly ominous. And let me just give you some background on this woman. She has been a medical ethicist for years. She was the author of a major report issued years ago in Great Britain that really shifted the ground on the biomedical debate. And in what I see is a very injurious direction. You're talking about a secular humanistic form of medical ethics here. But I want you to hear something she said here. She said, some doctors and nurses get competitive about the triumph of keeping these tiny premature babies alive. It would be better, she says, to set a minimum age than to have no form of scrutiny or regulation. Now, forgive me, but I feel like this is Alice in Wonderland confronting biomedical ethics. What does this mean? It is wrong for doctors to do their very best to see what kind of babies and how young a baby born prematurely can be saved. That's not medical progress. The goal should not be to save more babies. What kind of logic is this? Just imagine the medical progress that has been made in recent years. Just a few years ago, a baby that was born at 30 weeks was considered to be very, very dangerous. It was unlikely the baby would survive. And now you have babies that are being born earlier and earlier, well back into the second trimester of pregnancy, that are being saved. And these children are alive now. Do they have some ongoing health problems? Some of them do. Some lung problems. Some problems in terms of birth weight and growth over a period of time. But those are manageable problems. These are young children who are alive. That only happened because doctors were pushing back. Neonatologists and other doctors were pushing back the envelope in order that more babies would be saved and so that more children would live. And Baroness Warnock is saying that competition is the problem. And when doctors are competing with each other to see who they can save, how young they can save, how many they can save, that's wrong. The British medical community is involved in other debates as well. You may remember that just a couple of weeks ago, we discussed the fact that there was a man who wanted life support and was the debate going to be turned down by medical authorities because it was too expensive. The National Health Service in Great Britain was evaluating whether a demand for this kind of resuscitation was actually too great a demand upon the nation's medical budget. Now, that opens a host of issues we could debate from socialized medicine all the way down to biomedical ethics. But at least it shows that in Great Britain, there is an ongoing, even a raging controversy over some of these issues. And we should watch with wary eyes. We should look very carefully at these developments, because what takes place in Europe and what takes place in Great Britain impacts the context for medical and ethical decision making here. And as we know, it also complicates the context of jurisprudence, as we now have Supreme Court justices who say that they will and can and do take these kind of issues into consideration, the opinions of foreign courts, of foreign doctors, of foreign authorities. It is an ominous development. We'll be watching the issue in Great Britain, but of course, these same issues are being debated here. It may be different terms, and it may be with different words and different people, but it is the same basic set of issues being debated. The U.S. Supreme Court is the scene of intense debate right now, but it's not so much taking place in oral arguments as it is among the justices. That's always the case when we come to this season in which major decisions are handed down. Just this week, we had a decision on medical marijuana in which the Supreme Court ruled that the states did not have the authority to allow the medical use of marijuana. Interesting discussion that would come out of that over federalism and the role of the national and the state governments. But as has been pointed out, you just look at this issue. Why is it so that it is wrong for the federal government to step in and say that Oregon is wrong to have a supposed right to die euthanasia law, when the Supreme Court is right to say that states like California and others cannot have states cannot have laws legalizing marijuana? What you have here is a double standard. Now, this gets back to the issue that federalism operates in the minds of most people according not only to their constitutional worldview, but according to their political and moral agenda. When the net result of a Supreme Court decision is that which we like, it ruled rightly. When it is something we don't want, it ruled wrongly. And that is a symptom of the politicization of our courts. The courts should rule according to the Constitution. It is the ideological contortion and corruption of our judicial process that leads to these endless debates. Coming down from the Supreme Court, we expect shortly, will be decisions on the Ten Commandments and a host of other issues of constitutional and political and moral importance. Of Kelo versus the City of New London, Connecticut, which will decide whether or not a city may use its eminent domain power to condemn private property. You have the McCreary County, Kentucky versus the American Civil Liberties Union, and you have Van Orden versus Perry. Those are the Texas and Kentucky cases related to the Ten Commandments. We have the town of Castle Rock, Colorado versus Gonzalez, in which the court will decide whether or not it is an individual's right to due process, which will be violated if a police department fails to enforce a judge's protection order without meaningful consideration or explanation. And Spectre versus Norwegian Cruise Lines that will deal with the Americans with Disabilities Act and will decide whether that covers cruise ships that are outside American waters. Some of these issues may seem large, some may seem small, but the interesting thing is that the actual legal fallout of some of these decisions that may sound peripheral may be enduring and rather huge in magnitude, because what you have here is a court that is changing the way the law is understood, a court that is, in too many cases, legislating from the bench and dealing with lower courts that have done the same, and thus each of these cases is worthy of our attention, and we will be watching with you. It is expected that many of these decisions may come down in recent days, and of course we are nearing what will be the end of the Supreme Court's term, coming quite quickly. Yesterday we talked about the issue of deliberate childlessness. Yes, that word deliberate is very important. It came after controversy when BeliefNet.com posted one of my essays on the topic. We reposted it today at the website, albertmoeller.com. We have a blog entry on it, the radio program yesterday. All I can tell you is that I invited your comment, and many of you have been writing. So keep writing. Keep thinking about the issue, and I'll be telling you what's coming in the mailbox. It's always worth watching when atheists debate themselves. That's what's happening in a series of articles between Dylan Evans and Salman Rushdie. And Dylan Evans is writing that atheists need to take a softer approach to atheism. What they need to do is admit that religion can be positive even if it can't be true. In this particular case, Mr. Evans was writing in The Guardian, a British newspaper, suggesting that there are many different species of atheism. He says that too many of today's atheists preach what he calls an old and tired atheism that is just too mean-spirited and extreme. He says what you need is a softer atheism that says, yes, it's true that there is no God, but it's all right that there are people who believe that there are, and in their religious systems they can come up with some beautiful things, they can produce some beautiful art. And he says we ought to be the kind of atheist who can say, religion's not all bad, it's just that there is no God. Answering him is Salman Rushdie, the famous or infamous novelist whose work, The Satanic Verses, got him put on death lists throughout much of the Middle East. Salman Rushdie just wants the old-style militant atheism. He suggests that what's happened is that Dylan Evans doesn't know what atheism is. He says what we need to go back to is the kind of atheism that says right up front that God doesn't exist and religion is evil. Why should we watch this as Christian believers? Because it should remind us that soft theology produces soft atheism. I actually respect Salman Rushdie far more than Dylan Evans in this particular exchange, because at least Salman Rushdie knows what he is rejecting. We ought to have a strong enough belief in God that it takes a very strong form of atheism to confront it. It is no compliment to us if our soft theology produces a soft atheism. What does it mean to say that religion can be nice even if it's not true? That's not what you're going to hear right here, folks, on the Albert Mohler Program. And we'll be back to talk about the issue of intelligent design and the Washington Post. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Many people were surprised, perhaps, by an editorial that appeared in the June 3 issue of the Washington Post. This particular issue of the newspaper published an editorial that went after a decision that had been made by the Museum of Natural History, as a part of the Smithsonian, to allow the Discovery Institute to show a film in its auditorium and to invite persons to come and see it. Evidently, this particular museum allows private groups to use its facilities for just such kind of events. And charges in this case, the Discovery Institute was charged $16,000 in order to show it. But those who worship at the High Church of Evolution discovered heresy in their midst and made a public issue, because what was going to be shown in the auditorium there at the National Museum of Natural History is a film that is entitled The Privileged Planet, The Search for Purpose in the Universe. Now, why was the Washington Post so upset about this? Well, first of all, it said that the museum had no place having in its auditorium a movie like this shown, while it itself administers displays and exhibits that support the Darwinian theory of evolution. It says that that should have given the museum pause from allowing the Discovery Institute to show this film. But it's the next point of its argument that I found particularly troubling and interesting. They went on and they said this, and I'm reading from the editorial, June 3, The Washington Post. While The Privileged Planet is an extremely sophisticated religious film, it is a religious film nevertheless. It uses scientific information, the apparently perfect position of Earth in its orbit and its galaxy, the uniqueness of its atmosphere, to answer affirmatively the philosophical question of whether life on Earth was part of a grand design and not just the result of chance and chemistry. Neither God nor evolution is mentioned. I'm still reading from the editorial. Neither God nor evolution is mentioned. Nevertheless, the film is consistent with the Discovery Institute's general aim, which is to drive a wedge into the scientific consensus about the origins of life and the universe, and to give a patina of scientific credibility to the idea of an intelligent creator, end quote. Well, let's just look at this at face value. The Washington Post evidently intends for this to be taken seriously as an editorial. I had hoped this was like published on the back page of the Weekly Standard as a parody. It's hard to make fun of something that is so ludicrous on its face. It calls The Privileged Planet a religious film, even though it admits it mentions neither God nor evolution. So what makes it religious in the view of the Washington Post? It is the fact that it suggests the possibility of design. Now, according to the logic of the Washington Post, normal, scientific, objective means no possibility of design. Do you see where we're getting here? The Washington Post is a very religious newspaper. By its own logic, it is an exceedingly religious newspaper. Its religion is secular fundamentalism. Now, a few weeks ago, we talked about the ethicist Gilbert Mylander and his wonderful essay on the myth of ethical objectivity. You see, the Washington Post is so steeped in secularism, it doesn't even recognize that fact anymore. It just assumes that its own editorial posture is normal. And anyone who believes in even the possibility of design is some kind of religious fanatic. Get that film out of the auditorium. And by the way, that's exactly what the National Museum of Natural History was intimidated to do. It gave the Discovery Institute back its money and moved on. With us today is a guest. Jay Richards is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, the Center for Science and Culture. He holds a Ph.D. in philosophy and in theology. He is the co-author with Guillermo Gonzalez of the book, The Privileged Planet, How Our Place in the Cosmos is Designed for Discovery. Dr. Richards, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Hey, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am glad to have you. And let me just ask you right straightforwardly.
Sure.
Have I misunderstood this situation?
You certainly have not misunderstood the implications or the logic of the Washington Post. What happened, we just basically wanted to have a premiere of the documentary in Washington, D.C. We looked for some places, actually ended up at the Museum of Natural History, and they said, well, yeah, we do things here, but they have to be co-sponsored by the museum, and so they have to be vetted. So we said, well, that doesn't seem likely, but sure, go ahead and vet the film. It was judged to be acceptable. We have the documents, and they said, yeah, so it has to be co-sponsored by us, and so the invitation needs to say from the director of the museum. So the trouble started after the invitations were sent out, of course, because what I like to call the Darwin Nazis. I mean, basically these hardcore materialists that want to silence any of this discussion just absolutely went berserk. And so what actually happened, though, with the museum is we have a signed contract with them, and so they pulled out as a co-sponsor of the event, but the event is still going to take place on June the 23rd, and they gave us back the $16,000, which we were going to have to pay for it. So now we're going to still have the event. We're just going to get to do it for free. So it's a very strange sort of way in which this has turned out.
Yeah, something tells me that wasn't the script according to the Washington Post.
No, it certainly wasn't. It's funny because you wouldn't even know from the Washington Post editorial that it was officially co-sponsored by the museum, and that was where the trouble started. There's, you know, delicate omissions in this. And, in fact, the editorialist who wrote this, we know that she saw the documentary because we sent it to her, and it's still called Dissing Darwin, which is strange because the documentary is about what you need to get a habitable planet, purpose in the universe. It doesn't even deal with biological evolution, but I think it's telling when people nevertheless attach Darwin to this, because Darwin has become the sort of high priest of scientific materialism. And so if you even question scientific materialism as a worldview and just suggest something, which I would think would be fairly innocuous, that the scientific evidence suggests purpose, it's taken as if it's a slight against St. Charles. It's very strange.
Now, with Guillermo Gonzalez, you wrote this book, The Privileged
Yes.
Planet, right?
That's right.
Now, in the book and in the movie, your purpose, as I understand it, Dr. Richards, is to make clear that the very structure of the universe insinuates a design of some sort, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, in the subtitle of the documentary, The Search for Purpose in the Universe, we suggest that you look at all the things you need to get a habitable planet, a habitable universe. It turns out those things that life needs also set up the best conditions for scientific discovery. So we actually argue not just that the universe is designed, you know, for intelligent beings, but that it's actually designed for discovery itself, that nature is meant to be read like a book. So our argument, if anything, I mean, it undergirds the practice of natural science, because they look, the universe is meant to be discovered. We're discovering things because it was set up that way, because it's structured rationally by a rational being. And so and in the documentary, at the end, I mean, there has been complaints about the tie-in. Well, at the end of the documentary, our argument is tied into the views of Copernicus and other founders of modern science, who themselves said, you know, the universe is the product of an intelligent being, and that's why it's rational, and that's why it can be discovered. And so, but that's what there have been complaints about. Well, there's that tie-in that implies purpose, even though it's not explicitly an argument for God's existence. It's certainly not an argument or against Darwin's theory of evolution, but it was clearly dangerous enough that they felt it had to be stopped.
Dr. Richards, it's great to have you. I want to ask you, can you hang on with us after this break?
Sure.
Okay, because I want to come back to something. And right now, let me just tell you, we want to invite you, our radio audience, to join this conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-8255. I posted a blog entry on this just a couple of days ago at albertmohler.com, and I dealt with this as a case of what I've called secular fundamentalism. But I want to tell you, I think we can see where this line of argument can go. For instance, if Dr. Richards and his associates can come out with a film that doesn't mention God, that the Washington Post dismisses because it's supposedly religious, how far is that from suggesting that an argument against same-sex marriage that doesn't mention God is still a religious argument because it implies that there is a right or wrong that is some kind of a transcendent value? I think we're very close. 877-893-8255 is the phone number. We'll be back with Dr. Richards. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, America. This is a fascinating discussion. Our guest today is Dr. Jay Richards, who is a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute. He holds a Ph.D. from Princeton Theological Seminary in philosophy and theology, and he's been watching this issue closely, and well, he should, because he's the co-author of the book behind the film that is at the center of the controversy. The film is The Privileged Planet. It doesn't mention God. It does make very clear that the universe, the cosmos, is intelligible. It's understood. And according to the filmmaker, Dr. Richards, and his colleagues, it was intended to be that way. Some intelligence designed the universe and meant for the universe to be understood. Now, there's more to it than that, of course, because this structure also indicates why this particular planet is hospitable to human life when others are not. The particular set of very finite circumstances, extremely finely tuned, that allow for human life on this planet in the first place. Dr. Richards, why do you think the Washington Post, just at the core of this issue, so hates the idea of this film being shown in the auditorium of the National Museum of Natural History?
I think you could boil it down to one word in the editorial, and they say that the film uses scientific information to answer affirmatively the philosophical question whether life was part of a grand design. It's the affirmatively that does all the work there. For instance, Carl Sagan's Cosmos series, there was a special showing of that revisited in the late 1990s. And the famous Cosmos series, Sagan starts out with the famous quote. He says, "The cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be." Well, Sagan is obviously not even really arguing. He's simply asserting a materialistic worldview. We, on the other hand, answer the opposite. We say, well, actually, scientific evidence points in the other direction. So if Sagan starts his series with a materialist creed, that's acceptable to the Washington Post, presumably. But we end a documentary suggesting purpose based on the evidence, the scientific evidence itself, and that's unacceptable. It seems to me that if something has a positive theistic implication, it is judged inappropriate for a public venue. If it's strict materialism, it's judged appropriate.
Well, you're headed right where I want us to head here, Dr. Richards, because, again, I go back to this myth of neutrality. The Washington Post is not neutral. They are adamantly opposed to any suggestion that there could be a design in the universe, much less a divine, intelligent designer. And your film does not even mention God. It's not a creation film. It is a film about design. But let me suggest to you that Richard Dawkins, the Oxford scientist who is most hostile to Christianity, he suggests right out front that there is no possibility of design, and suggests that it simply is not even a valid question. Stephen Hawking, the Cambridge mathematician, who is celebrated by the museums such as the Smithsonian and newspapers such as the Washington Post, says that the question of God is irrelevant because, given the construction of the universe, there's nothing for him to do or to have done.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think your point is so well made. If you answer the question of design negatively, you're just normal. You haven't actually made a decision in their mind.
That's right.
But
no,
the moment you say,
in fact, the former editor of the Encyclopedia Britannica, a guy named Robert McHenry, wrote an article just this last week in TechCentral.com. And he said, "Materialism is the default position of any intelligent person that has not had a direct revelation from God." So he wants to exempt materialism from the question, well, why accept that view? So that it's the default position. That's what the Washington Post wants to do. And I think it's an insidious idea because almost anything has a theological implication one way or the other. And so if you're just going to exclude the those ideas that have a positive theistic implication, you're basically ruling certain ideas out of bounds simply because they might suggest something that somebody doesn't want to believe. And that's a whole lot of stuff.
Dr. Richards, thank you for that reference to that article. I feel a radio show coming on. I am familiar with the individual you cite there, and I'm not surprised by the argument. But, it does go to show, again, that we have this enormous divide in America right now. And when you look at the Washington Post, I don't think it has mass popular influence. Mm-hmm. But it is very predictable, or predictive, I should say, of where the cultural elite really stands. And you and your colleagues are so good at getting to the basic issue of naturalism. Isn't that what's really behind this?
Oh, absolutely. It's naturalism or materialism, and it's being treated as a default position that doesn't have to be defended.
And by naturalism, we mean that there isn't even the possibility that the world can be explained by something other than itself.
That's right.
Well, that is the cherished first principle of the High Church of Secularism. And evidently, the church newsletter of the High Church of Secularism, well, that role's being filled right now by the Washington Post, evidencing the doctrine of secular fundamentalism in its strongest form. Dr. J. Richards is Senior Fellow of the Discovery Institute. It has been wonderful to have you on the program, Dr. Richards. I hope you'll come back soon.
Oh, absolutely, Matt. My pleasure.
Folks, we want you to join this conversation. I want to know what you think. Call me at 1-877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is Intelligent Conversation for the Intelligently Designed. We'll be right back. You know, folks, some of these issues can look pretty abstract and esoteric. I mean, after all, where does the water hit the wheel in your life just based on what an editorial in the Washington Post might argue? Well, here's the deal. This is how the cultural elite thinks. This is the larger secular naturalistic worldview that frames so much of the academic reality in America. This is the worldview that gets filtered down into textbooks in the schools. This is the worldview that gets filtered through the media, through the entertainment industry, and especially through academia. It gets right down into the public school classroom. It gets right down into the university, into the college. This is what is being handed down as just normative and normal to our young people. Now, I realize that some of you do not debate issues of evolution and intelligent design every day. That's fine. But understand that we are involved in a battle for the minds, and the target is our children. And the issue is what is going to frame reality? What is going to be considered normal? That's what's so scary in this issue of the Washington Post. This movie, The Privileged Planet, doesn't even mention God, but it is being, and we should say, successfully opposed by the Washington Post because it just asserts the possibility and the likelihood of design in the universe. We're living in strange times. I want you to call and join the conversation. I want to know what you think about this. Some of you may think, well, that's just right. Some of you, I hold no doubt, are outraged. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Now let's go to Rob, listening on XM Satellite Radio in Reno, Nevada. Rob, welcome.
Yeah, that was quick.
Yeah, go right ahead.
It seems incredible to me that these people are so stupid that they will look at a vehicle and say, you know, there's design there, somebody made that, or a watch, there's design, somebody made that. Yet they look at the incredible complexity of the universe and say, it just happened.
Well, Rob, do you think maybe there's more to it than just the intellect? Maybe this involves the will?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because if they acknowledge design, then they've got to acknowledge God, and then they've got to, you know, then they've got to deal with God.
Yeah, I think you're really onto something there, Rob. See, I think they know that the moment they acknowledge or admit even the possibility of design, they really have admitted the possibility of a whole lot more. And if a movie like this is enough to make the editors at the Washington Post both shake in their boots and then respond with outrage, I think it shows you just what kind of a religious doctrine, I mean that just the way I said it, just what kind of a religious doctrine this evolutionary naturalism has really become and has come to function in the secularist mind. Rob, thanks so much for your call. I want to know what you think, folks. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I was frankly surprised. You know, normally I would think that even a newspaper like the Washington Post would couch this in more cautious language. That's what surprised me. It is the right up front, in your face, secularism of this editorial that really did come as something of a surprise. I would have been less surprised had this been in the Voice and by the pen of a syndicated columnist. But this isn't one of the paper's official editorials. This means it represents the political and cultural statement, the deep beliefs of the editors themselves. Let me just read to you from the article I published just a few days ago on this. And by the way, it's posted at albertmuller.com. It's dated June 4, so it's back on Saturday. I say this: for the paper to be consistently opposed to any religious displays, programs, or exhibitions at the museum, it should call for a removal of the displays describing Darwin's theory of evolution As we learn on the playground, fair is fair. Evolutionary theory is a cherished central doctrine of the Church of Secularism. Every religion needs a cosmology, and that cosmology is tied to meaning and morality. If the universe was brought into being and ordered by a creator, we are then obligated to know, honor, and obey him. If there is no creator, there are no fixed moral laws, no absolute truths, no accountability, and there is no divine judge. That's why the Washington Post is so outraged by the very thought that a film about intelligent design would be shown at the National Museum of Natural History. That museum is now a temple for the worship and propagation of secular naturalism, and the paper is defending that monopoly with a fundamentalist fervor. There's a whole lot going on here, and it's really worthy of our attention. Just before we go into the break, I want to take a call from Chuck, listening on XM Satellite Radio in Indiana. Chuck, go right ahead.
Yeah, how's it going there? First of all, I just want to let you know that I'm a reborn Christian. Ever since September 11th, I've actually felt the actual holy presence of God, and he's completely changed my life around. And as far as when it comes to the subject we're talking about on hand is that I got a question, first of all. The judges that we're trying to nominate, you know, that Bush is trying to nominate, that they're filibustering, I'm just wondering, do you think the bill will actually make a difference on secularism and what's being taught in the schools as far as evolution being a fact of theory? Or, you know, I'm still trying to keep up on these, especially I listen to Channel 170 on my XM radio.
Chuck, thanks for going into a break, so I have to be fast. But, yes, you're right to tie all this together, because what we have here is a cultural movement towards sidelining not only Christian belief, but even the public admission of the possibility of Christian belief. And yes, when you're thinking about the Supreme Court, and we are watching all these judicial nominations so closely, and that's why the issue is so important, you know that it is the courts who will eventually deal with this. Right now, you have the courts, both at state and federal levels, dealing with issues such as in Cobb County, Georgia, where there was just a label put on the science textbook saying that evolution's merely a theory. A federal judge struck that down. Chuck, you're right. Watch the judges. Here's the scary thought. They're reading the newspaper. We'll be right back with some final thoughts. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, that's just somehow the way it is. All the phone lines were lit up at the end. I wish we had more time to talk about this issue, because it's clear that we struck a nerve. I think there are a lot of parents out there, college students, the people who are watching the media and watching the culture, who detect that something very fundamental is changing. And I would suggest that it is a shift towards this kind of public opposition to the very idea that the universe could have been created. There is a secular hostility. We're not paranoid here, folks. There is a secular hostility that we can document. When the Washington Post, which is by any measure one of the nation's leading newspapers, when it publishes something like this on its editorial page, it really is making a statement. And we really ought to pay attention. But I want to conclude today by talking about the idea of intelligent design. And I want to tell you something that you really need to hear. And that is that intelligent design is important, but it's not enough. In other words, intelligent design is not the biblical doctrine of creation. As a matter of fact, we as Christians do not understand design as an adequate understanding of what God is telling us in creation. We understand that God created the world, and we understand that the book of Genesis is a very deep understanding that is offered to us, not only of the how and of the when, but of the why. The most important issue is the why. Intelligent design is an intellectual tool. It is most useful for showing just what we saw today, that the only alternative to an understanding of design is a denial of the very possibility of design. Intellectual tools function to help us to see a reality. My doctrine of creation is not intelligent design, but intelligent design is a wonderful apologetic instrument. It's a wonderful way as a concept of getting at the bottom line issue. Because if the very idea of design brings on such an allergic response, we really do know what we're dealing with in a secular culture. Those who are the main theorists and proponents of intelligent design have performed a brave service in the academic world and in the world of thought and science by forcing the scientists to admit, those who are so adamantly committed to evolutionary theory, to admit that they are wholeheartedly devoted to secularism, or at least that their thought, the construction of their thought, is wholeheartedly committed to secularism. That's important. But as a Christian, we gain our understanding of creation not from an intellectual tool like intelligent design, but from the inerrant, infallible Word of God. Now, most crucially, we return to the book of Genesis, which I believe is not only true, but is a literal, authoritative, absolutely transcendently revealed message, not only of the fact that creation was God's good pleasure, but that it was for the purpose of showing His glory. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'll meet you there.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Moeller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.